Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey everyone, I'm Jess.
I'm Jen. Welcome to Fat Mascara.
We are talking today to an amazing founder. Jen, tell us about Leah Hugh.
Well, I'll tell you about her, but first I just want to point out, like, we don't often have founders on, but the reason I've been following Leah's career because I think it sort of has tracked and paralleled with a lot of the biggest stories in beauty culture that have come out over the last, I mean, like maybe the time period that you and I have been working on Fat Mascara, maybe over the last 10 years, actually. But like the rise of content creators, when creators pivot to become founders, the K-beauty wave, social media navigating its up and down, clean beauty, sunscreen controversies. And Leah has built a business and her content creation before she built Crave Beauty, which she's the CEO of, that sort of has followed a lot of these parallels. And I think that she has a unique position to talk about them. And I just love what she's doing.
Yeah, she's hit like every plot point, almost all of them, except for like celebrity airbrushing or something. She's really had like so many moments in all of these kind of beauty pop culture-y conversations.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about some of them. So who is Leah Hugh? Leah Hugh is a content creator. She's a founder. She is the CEO of Crave Beauty. She also launched, this is really cool, Press Reset Ventures, which is a venture capital fund and a studio that invests in early stage beauty companies that are all about sustainable innovation and inclusivity. As Jen said, she started Crave Beauty in 2017, and we're going to hear about how she built her brand.
I'm so excited to talk to her, not just about her brand, but also about being a YouTuber, her content creation, where she grew up. Let's get into it with Leah Hugh. Guys, we are so excited to have Leah Hugh here. Let me just tell you, she's a pro. She came in with a fancy mic. She knew to clap. She's a content creator at heart. Leah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Huge, huge, huge fan and an avid listener to the pod.
Avid listener.
Seriously. Such an honor to be here. And our team freaking loves you both. Whenever you guys mention Crave Beauty or my name on your podcast, our team literally like screamed out loud when we were together. We had like a listening party and everything. So it's like a full circle moment to us.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Mutual admiration society, because our listeners definitely have heard us talk about you and Crave. And so we were like, we just have to have you on and find out more.
I feel like, well, we'll get to this. Like, you definitely have like an important brand right now in beauty. Like there is no parallel to your brand right now. And that's why it's very interesting.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Okay, we'll get to it. Or Jen's going to kick it off with a question.
Well, Crave Beauty is a big part of you now, but I want to know Leah's background a little bit more for people who don't know who you are with your big YouTube channel and everything, but you were brought up in Korea, right? You studied architecture?
Yeah. You did your homework. Yeah. So I was born and raised in Seoul, South Korea. And then I obviously went to college there. I had my first corporate job in South Korea as well, in the biggest beauty conglomerate in South Korea. And in my undergrad, I did study interior design. I thought I would become an architect or a designer for sure. But in my senior year, I realized that my passion has died down a lot for the design field. And then I was just looking around the entire world. And that was the time around like 2013 when the very first wave of K-pop was getting bigger globally and internationally. And that kind of interest has kind of trickled down to what skincare products are they using, or like what makeup products are these like K-pop stars using, because they look very glittery and glam and all that. So I think that's when I decided to start my own YouTube channel, because I was living in Korea, I can speak English. So I started reviewing Korean beauty and skincare products on my YouTube channel, and then that led me to having a job in the beauty industry. So my only corporate job that I had was in Amore Pacific, so that was really fun. So I was there for about 2.5 years. After doing that, I transitioned to become a YouTuber full-time, and my growth on YouTube was a very gradual and incremental thing. I do have like over 1 million subscribers now, but it wasn't one moment that just blew up the channel. So yeah, it was a very gradual thing.
When you started your YouTube channel, was the audience, like what countries were the audience in?
Mainly America.
Yeah. It was United States. Okay. I was just curious about that. And so when you got this corporate job, did they know you were like a content creator on the side?
So YouTube was a very foreign platform in Korea back then. So YouTube didn't come to Korea until like 2016, I want to say, or 2015. So we obviously have like our own Korean blogging platform that was really popular. But I didn't know that Koreans actually watch YouTube. So slowly but surely, people found out about my existence on the YouTube channel.
Well, you were making a channel, so obviously people knew it existed, right?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people found it very fascinating at the time, because it is a very different type of content that no one was making in Korea. And fun fact, I was actually the very first Korea-based YouTuber, because no one else was doing this.
Yeah. What was the video platform in South Korea at the time?
We didn't have a video platform. It was mainly just written blog and pictures and all that, yeah.
So Amore Pacific slowly, how long were you there? Did you work there?
2.5 years.
I mean, they must have found out that you knew what you're doing besides e-merchandising and e-tailing and whatever you were doing for them. What did you do for them?
I wasn't under the digital department, so I was managing their entire e-com channel, like their own D2C, and it was a fun time. But all the brand marketers at one point, you know, Amore Pacific is huge. There's like over 30 or 40 brands, but all the brand marketers would come to me personally to gift products so that I can feature it on my YouTube channel and the time that I have over the weekend. So at one point it was getting a lot because I didn't sign up for that and I wasn't getting paid to feature their products or anything like that. So it was a hard, it was a hard political balance, I want to say.
So when you decided to leave Amore Pacific, the corporate world, to become a content creator full time, did you have a plan?
I didn't have a plan, to be honest. It's interesting because I don't think I ever publicly said this on a podcast channel, but I actually had another internal job offer at Amore Pacific. So I'm not sure if you guys remember that Michelle Phan, the OG beauty YouTuber, she was becoming the face of Lancome and she was a digital ambassador for the entire L'Oreal group. Mm-hmm. So that's something that Amore Pacific saw that we can probably have because Lia Yu is within our Amore Pacific employee. So they offered a very similar job. And I actually didn't think that I was capable of it, nor I was passionate about it. So I actually turned that job down. And I think that was a moment where I felt like maybe it's time for me to do my own thing. So no, I did not have any plan and I didn't make any money for the next like 365 days as a YouTuber, because that was also pre like influencer marketing era, where nowadays a lot of creators can live with abundance. But back then, I don't think a lot of creators survived just by being a YouTuber or a creator. So it was an interesting time.
So there's like a parallel universe where you are literally the head of the creative at Amore Pacific and creating videos all day long and still with them. I don't know why I made this about like a Spider-Man movie in my head, but I did.
Maybe, yeah. It's like choose your own adventure. And then I made that decision. I think my life would be a little bit different.
Well, you say that so many creators are making so much money. You could have been doing that, but I don't know. There weren't that many creators back then. Now there are so many. I don't know. What do you think about the creator economy now? It's pretty flooded.
It's very oversaturated. And I think now I get discouraged from making more content because I always feel like I'm adding more to the noise. I'm not adding value because there's so many skincare creators out there. There's like derminfluencers, chemist influencers, which I really love and just love learning from. So I think now my positioning as a content creator, and I think this is not a unique feeling that I only have, which I know it's shared across a lot of other skincare creators. They feel like they're maybe adding to the noise and they're trying to refine like what their voice would be, what the value that we can offer would be in a refreshing way, because you open the app of TikTok, you're like literally flooded by like 100 different content just screaming and shouting at you. And as a content consumer, it can be so overwhelming. And yeah, I think because of that, I'm just watching this space and observing like where everything goes. And I'm also trying to see like what I can uniquely offer in terms of perspective and voice on this madness.
It's funny when you, because you're talking about this example of you being at Amore and being like potentially, if you had chosen another path, the face at that time of Amore, like Michelle Phan, like at that time, she was like, look at our social media person. Look at this voice of authority. Look at this expert. And now it's like, if you picture this time lapse, it's just mushroomed and mushroomed and mushroomed. And you even look at the past year, it's mushroomed and mushroomed. You have to figure out what you're going to say. But your brand, as I said at the top, I really do think it says something different. I think you do actually said I wasn't being nice. I do think that you really don't have a parallel in the beauty industry. You started Crave in 2017 as a brand that has done something I think really tricky. Honestly, I think you had like big, if I can say this, like big balls to start a brand that is trying to make money, but you're also poking holes at the industry and pointing out problems. That's really tricky. What are those things that bothered you in the beginning? Like what were some of those problems that you wanted to address with your brand?
That's a really good summary. And I'm so, wow, impressed that you kind of like saw through like us rolling up the middle finger in a very silent and a very quiet way to the industry. Not a lot of people get
that. But it wasn't an aggressive way. Right. I have to say it was a very gentle way of pointing things out without being like finger waggy. Like absolutely, this industry sucks and you consumers are, you know, it was really gentle. So how did you do it and what problems were you trying to initially address?
Yeah, I mean, I love the industry. I'm a beauty junkie first and foremost. So I care about this industry so much, which is why I want to make it a better place for the customers. So there are mainly two things where it's like, first of all, product development process never starts from how do we solve this customer pain point? Like, how should we solve this customer's skin? It always starts from, okay, we have like 10 million of sales target to meet this year. We're at 2 million. Therefore, we need to launch like three more products to fill this gap. I mean, unfortunately, it is the easiest way to grow your top line revenue by launching new products. And that's the sad truth. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing is...
So that's a problem for you?
That is a problem for me and problem for the customers too, because they're just being bombarded by so many products that are not made for them. It's made to sell more. So that's the very first product. The second one is a very fast fashion-like product launch cycle. And I think we're increasingly seeing so many new product launches every single day, every single week. And I'm sure as both of you guys are very familiar with the space and you get probably a lot of mailers and PR boxes, you're probably very overwhelmed and just almost jaded because you have only one skin to try all these products. But, mm-hmm. you know, one brand is churning out so many new products just because they can. So I think that fast product launch cycle was something that I wanted to definitely address. So those were the two main problems that I definitely wanted to tackle.
Got it. So you talk about the product release cadence, you know, must push out more product, must push out more product. That's a tricky thing for you to tackle because that is sort of the foundation of how the beauty business works. Mm-hmm. You have to push out more product to sell more product. Mm-hmm. If you're in certain stores, I'm imagining if it's how I understand retail, the retailers want to know what else are you coming out with so that you can sort of earn your keep with your buyers and your retailers. How are you managing this without looking like mm-hmm. a lunatic?
I think the beauty industry deserves more case studies where there mm-hmm. is a brand that successfully grew their top line revenue without expanding their product portfolio, right?
I believe it exists. And yes, keep going. By the way, I'm on your side.
Yes. If there are more examples that can show the bigger conglomerates that are churning out unnecessary products, I would have to say, I think the beauty industry will listen because at the end of the day, the most sustainable thing is to make less products. So that's one thing. And then I think the second thing is where the investors, like the beauty investors headspace is at and how they align with each brand owner's vision, because oftentimes it's not the founder or the executive team within the company that wants to launch so many products. It's often the times the shareholders that are like puppeting these brand executive teams to grow at all costs. And that can mean spending a lot of revenue back into paid socials, but it can also mean just churning out more and more and more products. So I think we have to change how the investors think about growth and the pace of growth too. And that's definitely a hard thing to do.
And can I ask you a question since you've been like in the beauty industry grind, like as a brand founder, this is not a leading question. Do these investors, do they know about beauty?
There are some, but I think majority of them are not the consumers.
That's what I mean. Like, are they the ones who are like living with and loving product? I have beauty products and I'll use them for years. Sorry, that's probably not like the good housekeeping rule of how often you should throw out a product. But it's the rate of consumption is really not at the pace of production. Mm-hmm. I love what you're doing with the kind of slow beauty. What do you call it? You have a name for it. You have a great name. Slow down skincare. Yes. Okay. It feels like it should come from like the ad council, not a brand trying to make money. But for you, what is a problem besides that, which is something you're not going to tackle overnight, but what's another problem with the beauty industry that you're also trying to fix? Like, what else is on your to-do list?
There are so many to-do lists, but I think one problem that I don't think I can solve myself would be the recycling side of the beauty business. Mm-hmm. And this has to do with the whole infrastructural help and the policymakers' involvement into advancing this entire recycling system in the United States. And I grew up in South Korea, and South Korea's recycling system is very meticulous. And literally, there's like a water bottle, and you know, it has a wrapper of the label around the water bottle. They ask the consumers or the recyclers to detach and separate those labels in a separate bin, and all the clear PET bottles go in one bin and all the colored plastics go into another bin. So it's like very thoroughly sorted. I think the US is lacking in that, where it doesn't educate the people on how to recycle. It doesn't want to talk about recycling system because it's quite honestly a big problem. So that's one thing I hope to solve with other beauty brands and also, quite honestly, like bigger beauty companies as well, by partnering with people in power, honestly.
Do you, speaking of people in power and other beauty brands, do you have any allies that you want to shout out or any other brands that you feel like are doing? Because you have such a, you're clearly a very values mission driven company. Not every brand is. For people who are listening who want to, who feel like, yeah, I like this brand, I like this girl, are there any other brands that have the same sort of spirit?
Yes. So Charlotte Parler from Dew Skin, I think, is doing an amazing job. And also, there's a lot of biotech companies within the ecosystem that are solving sustainability problems in their own unique ways, starting with like raw material sourcing and changing that entire process. So I think those are maybe some allies that I can really think of right now, top of my head.
It's funny you brought up Dew Skin because they do something that I wanted to talk to you about. They're very transparent about how their products get made, their supply chain, when issues come out. You have also started to be, well, you've from the beginning with Crave Beauty, you've been very transparent with consumers, for better or worse, about what's going on behind the scenes. Have you ever regretted filling people in on how it really works?
This is a really good question. No one has asked me the downside of being transparent, but I think there is definitely a downside. But I can start with like a good side. It basically is your customers and your community become the messenger of your brand. So what we noticed was that when we did our Waste Me Not pop-up in New York City last year, which was basically us kind of peeling the curtains behind the scenes and displaying all the production screw-ups that we had made due to the global supply chain crisis and all that. So we were repurposing a very flopped and failed batch of our matcha hemp hydrating cleanser into a body wash, which became a very limited edition. And I hope we don't need to make another limited edition body wash, to be honest. But when we opened that and communicated that very transparently to the customers of like, hey, we kind of screwed up. Like, this is gallons and gallons and gallons of matcha cleanser that we can't honestly sell as a regular cleanser because the textural difference is so drastically different. So that said, when we communicated that, all the people who were standing in the line were bringing their friends, like storytelling that to their friends. And these people are basically just spreading seeds to one another. And that just was such a gratifying moment for our entire team because we were honestly wanting to do something right. And I think it resonated in the best way possible. And then the downside of it is people expect a lot more. And I think building up that expectation is not necessarily like a bad thing, but there was one time where we kind of revealed our product development process of making a mineral sunscreen. And with any sunscreen development, it comes with a very rigorous SPF testing. But as we all know, SPF testing can vary by lab to lab, by like who's participating in the test itself, because it's done on humans. So we were showcasing that, hey, we made this prototype, we sent it to two different labs, lab A and lab B. One came out to be SPF 30, which we was aiming for, but another came out to be SPF 15. So I was making it a point that the SPF testing method itself is not perfect. You know, we have all gone through this entire history. And I think the comment feed, most of the comments were very positive about like us opening up, but there were some comments saying like, oh, basically you failed. So I think there are a lot of people who are very quick to judge and want to be more critical. And that's like a whole nother kind of gate that we opened ourselves. And yeah, that's something that we're trying to navigate, I guess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Listen, there are so many skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, and you know I will try most of them. But how do you know your products are actually working? Some research to back up the claims. That's why Jess and I are all about Ritual. They created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted a clinical study to take the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual's Hyacera is now a part of my skincare routine, and I got in the habit of taking it every day by putting the cute little purple jar right next to my sunscreen. It looks nice on my vanity, and let's be honest, I love that. But once I stuck with the habit, I really noticed a difference in my skin. I am not the only one. In a clinical study, taking Hyacera for 90 days led to a 3.6-time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles as compared to placebo. And it led to a 2.9 increase in skin smoothness. I also like that they're easy to swallow. The capsules sort of taste like vanilla. They're not all weird and fishy like some other supplements. Plus, Ritual is a certified B Corp, something we learned about on a recent episode. And all their supplements, including the Daily Protein and their Sleep Bio Series Melatonin supplement, are vegan, gluten-free, and made traceable. Do what Jess and I did. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off.
How do you handle that as the founder? Because this is like you put your life into this. This is your, it's very cliche, it's your baby. It's your baby. But it is your baby. Like, this is your line. How do you feel when you get criticism, especially public criticism?
I think I'm more immune to it than other founders because I've done content for so long. So I have dealt with negative comments. And I think that's been just something that comes with, I guess, gaining more popularity from your content, from your products. I think whenever I see more negative comments, I feel like I made it now that I have like a lot of lovers, but some haters that care so much to enough to spend their energy on typing that negative comment.
But you actually feel, I need clarity. You feel happy when you see negative comments?
I'm not happy, but I cope very well.
Did you always? Surely when you were like in Seoul in your early 20s, you weren't like psyched when you were getting negative comments, were you?
No. No one's psyched when they get a negative comment, for sure. It is what I feel, but I think I built that muscle enough to brush it off easily. What about you guys? How do you guys deal with, do you guys have any like criticism or negative comments?
Of course.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a cool day.
Have you ever seen Apple Podcast reviews, Leah?
I have not.
Yeah, like it's the same as anybody that's putting content out into the world. You have to expect that.
Yeah.
I try and do my best. And I think the two examples that you brought up, I do want to close the loop on one of them because I'm not sure if everybody knows the story of that body wash. You ended up selling it at a discount, if I'm correct, in a slightly different bottle as a face wash, was it?
Yeah.
Right. And it worked perfectly well as a face wash, thereby educating the customer about supply chain, about what the actual raw ingredients are in products. Like, they learned so many lessons in that. And the fact that a lot of customers are open to that should be a lesson to, I think, other brands as well. The second one with the sunscreen, however, it's like they don't actually understand how SPF testing works. And I'm not putting, like, why should they? I have read the monograph from the FDA. It is a brain fuck, excuse my language. It is
That's a new one. I like that, a brain fuck.
There's a panel of scientists that have given their opinion, and you can see in the government language that they don't want to like annoy any of the scientists, so they include all of the parameters. So it ends up being you have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars as a company to get your SPF testing so that it can show all of the things that the government wants it to show, here in the United States at least. And you saying we got an SPF 15, correct me if I'm wrong, it could also mean you had like SPF have 28, but you can only say 15. Like, it could have been very, very close to what you wanted to label it,
that's
just
correct.
Not
yes.
where the government needed it to be. So you want to educate and you're pushing the customer forward. But at a certain point, it's like, guys, do you even want to know this? Like, do you really want, do you want like this much transparency? Because this is like, you need a degree and 10 years yeah. of experience in the beauty industry to understand how this works. So my point just being like that education piece, which I think is so, it seems to be so important to you. And I've noticed in your content too, you've been more of like a professorial, a little bit educator has been the spin you're taking. Does that yeah. come naturally to you? And do you think it benefits the company as well as the customer?
Oh, that's a good question. I hope it benefits the company, but yeah, I hope so too. But naturally, I'm very curious. I love digging deeper into things. And I think my talent lies and my strength lies in breaking down very complex information in a very easily digestible way. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of people come to my YouTube channel. So because I know the expectation is that, that makes me want to read like all these different SPF monograph on the FDA site or the ISO 2444, which is the SPF testing method, in the granular detail so that I can convey and break down the complicated information. But to your point, Jen, I think customers actually don't need to know this much at the end of the day.
I struggle with that too.
I hope they're just applying more sunscreen than they actually, you know, think that is enough. So at the end of the day, yeah, it will matter to some people, but to a majority, it might not be. But I hope with all the, I guess, like behind the scenes, like the waste issues that we are opening up and educating and really telling people can change how other businesses operate. And it's been a very cool journey because ever since we did the Waste Me Not pop-up and the Waste Me Not campaign, a lot of other brand founders come to me and say, hey, like we also have this amount of excess inventory or like production screw-ups. Like how can we package this and communicate this? So I do see behind the scenes, like people are more willing to talk about it because we started this conversation and they obviously saw that customers perceived it very well. And it's not something to be ashamed of if you're a business person and you have a lot of inventory or you have a lot of production screw-ups. I think we are living in an age where a lot of customers want to know that and would appreciate that level of information from companies.
Like I just pictured in my head a sample sale. You know how like when a fashion company has a sample sale, like couldn't some of these raw material suppliers and these like contract manufacturers all of you use do like the fire sale? Like, come on. I know they couldn't probably use proprietary formulas. Like if Dior messes up its body lotion, they're not going to want anybody to get their hands on it, but it would be nice.
Yeah.
Leah, you mentioned the environmental impacts and something Jess and I are really interested in. I think a lot of our listeners are, and it feels so daunting. And you have so much guilt when you buy beauty products. We love beauty products. I want to try new things. What do you tell people who have that guilt as well and want to try and be more conscious of their environmental footprint? Like keep it a little bit smaller. What are like the most important things to look for when you're looking at buying beauty products? Tough question.
That is a tough question. I always encourage my followers to just commit to the skincare product that they purchased. So there's a rule of one empty, one newbie.
It sounds like it's really obvious, but it's absolutely not. I have like bottles of half-filled things. I get it.
Yeah. So you can only buy a new product or new skincare product only if you hit the bottom of another skincare product that you're using. So I think that's a good rule to stick to. And I think when you're also ordering a lot, let's say from Amazon or from these e-com sites, just being mindful of grouping all the products in just one order so that
you don't have a million Amazon packages coming to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's another carbon footprint, you know, carbon emission. So I think those two things that comes to my mind. And if a brand is claiming to be natural, I would question like how they are sourcing those natural ingredients.
It's funny you bring up sourcing because that is something I wanted to ask you about. I know you work hard on your sourcing for Crave Beauty. Are there ingredients that you think you were surprised to find had such a big environmental impact? And what were they?
There were so many. I think mostly essential oils and a lot of fragrance ingredients. And it's really hard because fragrance is, it doesn't disclose individual ingredients, right? It's just labeled as fragrance on the ingredient list. So customers can't really know what it actually contains, whether it contains exactly a rose oil, citrus oil, or sandalwood and all that. But rose oil, when I learned that it takes 252,000 petals to make a 5-milliliter vial of rose oil, and if everyone is using rose oil in the industry, like, we would have no land that's left for food agriculture and harvesting.
Wow.
And I think sandalwood has another issue of overexploiting the land use and really taking over cultural lands that were kept to indigenous people in mm-hmm. the regions. So that's becoming a big issue that I'm starting to learn about, where I was really shocked too. And I think when people think about roses and sandalwood, like, they have this very beautiful perception of nature. But I think people don't often know that it might be impacting quite hugely in really damaging the entire environment, deforestation and biodiversity loss and all that. So those were the ones that were really alarming when I first learned.
And you, I know you talked to me, you said you use tamanu oil in some of your products now. What's the story with that? Is that an easy to grow crop?
Yeah, it's relatively easy to grow crop. I think the issue that we had with tamanu oil is, so to go from the top, tamanu oil is used in our Great Barrier Reef, and it has been. We use 10% of tamanu oil, and we sold about like a million Great Barrier Reef units, which is quite significant amount. So that becomes like, I think, almost 5,000 liters or more of tamanu oil. We supplied it from a distributor that gets their tamanu oil from Madagascar originally. And I think Madagascar is known for having very unethical labor practices and forced labor issues. So I honestly don't know what actually happened with our original supplier of tamanu oil. Our distributor one day said to us that, hey, we can't source any tamanu oil from this region anymore. So I think that's when I started digging into what are the labor practices around like deshelling and harvesting and growing to tamanu nuts and tamanu trees. And that led us into partnering with a third-party organization, which works with a lot of local grassroots organizations for environmental solutions, to invest in a land in Indonesia and also to increase wages for the women harvesters, who's basically just picking the tamanu tree, and you also need to dry it, and then you have to deshell it in order to obtain the nut, in order to extract and press and extract it. So we learned about the entire chain of process of how the tamanu oil is sourced and grown and gets into our product. And once you know that, you have to do something about it to make it better. So that's what we basically did. And we invested a ton of efforts and also a lot of money into that project. And I think it was a very good example that us ourselves learn that we want to replicate that model to other products that we currently have.
So to go backwards and look through the supply chain and be like, okay, here's another place where if we supported from the ground up the growers and the suppliers, it's going to make everything better for everyone.
Yeah. So, I mean, we try our best to vet all the sources, but there's always a middleman. There's a distributor who connects all the farms. And I want to go directly to the farm to exactly know if I'm sourcing cacao, which has a lot of child labor issue in Africa, is not using child labor, first and foremost. And I think those are the things that you can't really see through if you always have a middleman. And I hope the distributors that we're working with are as honest as they could be, but sometimes their best interest is to sell the ingredients to us. Therefore, they might not even know like the entire granular details of what we want to know.
I mean, you have the luck too of selling a million of something allows you to do that. Just people listening are like, well, why don't all brands do this? It's also when you're a small indie brand and you're only moving like 200 of an item, you can't always do this or else you literally in red because the thing costs more to make than you could ever sell it for. But I think it's so cool that you've grown your company large enough that you are able to do some of this.
Yeah. It's a very eye-opening experience. Entire like sourcing process was very fun to learn, but also very frustrating to learn that there's so much unethical labor practices that are involved.
So you're still a content creator talking about your skincare line, but also educating people, but you're also a CEO. Which one do you feel more comfortable in? Which role?
Content creator.
Says the woman who just told us about moving her entire production to another country and starting from ground up. Okay.
Yes.
Why?
As I said, I love breaking down like very hard to understand information into the most easily digestible one. And I think that's almost my purpose on the internet. And of course, you can do that with products. And I think company can have like another better leader to operate instead of me, to be honest. But
that was my next question. Why don't you, I guess maybe in time, maybe you can be just the face.
Creative director or founder?
There's always been a succession planning within the company. So I'm slowly like raising up the leaders in the company so that they can eventually replace me. So definitely in the works. Yes.
Okay.
I'm not tied to the CEO title at all.
Okay.
That's really impressive and humble. And I think it's important.
What sort of feedback are you getting from your peers in the industry about everything you're doing? By everything, that's pretty broad, but can you give us feedback that you've gotten from your peers in the industry? Because you are definitely making some waves.
Oh, thank you. I don't know about like how the big brands think about us, like the L'Oreal's and Estee Lauder's and the entire world thinks about us. But I do think that within the indie brand founder cohort space, that we're like literally sticking together to make a bigger voice. So that's why I talk to Charlotte a lot from Dew Skin. I talk to Lisa a lot from Experiment and Priscilla from CocoKind. I think the new generation of founders have the gravitas, hopefully, to be able to be heard by the bigger conglomerate companies to change their practice, to whether that be more sustainable, whether that be slowing down the skincare industry. So the feedback from the founder side of the things have been very positive. And as I shared before, like when they had production screw ups, they messaged me immediately. And there were, I think, 5 different brands that actually came to us that have opened their like warehouse to their customers and have seen like great results with that too.
We barely talked about Crave Beauty products, but I'm like, I know your skin has changed so much because I've watched your videos through the years. So I'm curious now what you use on your skin every day.
I'm a minimalist, so I use...
This tracks with your ethos of your company, so I get it.
when I'm wearing sunscreen or makeup, I definitely start with a makeup rewind to remove all the makeup, and then matcha and hydrating cleanser to follow up as a second cleanse, but I only use that for like 20 seconds to make sure that my skin barrier is not damaged, and then follow up with either moisturizer... Otso Simple Water Cream is a very lightweight one. So now that it's coming into winter, I'm using a thicker moisturizer from a Korean brand called Estera. It's a derm brand that is actually owned by Amore Pacific, staying loyal. But yeah, so I'm using that cream for my skin barrier. Yeah, that's about it, I think.
What about makeup-wise? What do you use?
Oh, from time to time, I would use like Oilala or Great Barrier Reef in between. Makeup-wise, what are you guys into right now? I see your red lipstick, Jen.
Oh, this is that Lisa Eldridge one, the velvet ones. Sweet. Oh. Jess and I've been obsessed with her line that, you know, it's finally available
velvet
in the States.
Too.
Oh,
also
yours
velvet.
Too?
Oh, you're wearing it also, Jess. That's mm-hmm. so funny.
Mm-hmm. Oh, both of the colors are very pretty.
Thank you.
I love Lisa's entire YouTube channel. I grew up with that.
It's so good.
Right?
Yes.
She's so soothing.
So... we're developing a lip tint for next
Fine.
Year, and we're using fully renewable feedstock. So basically, a lot of synthetic ingredients in the beauty industry comes from crude oil, like petroleum crude oil. And that's where they feed like the chemical process to start stuff to make stuff, but we wanted to make it fully renewable and also with upcycled ingredients as well. So we've been trialing a lot of different formulas with a lot of different ingredients. So we finally landed on something that I really enjoyed.
This word feedstock that you just said, you meant like as the base that the formula goes into?
That's where the entire chemical process starts, yeah.
If you're like fermenting something or just for any synthetic ingredient?
For any.
Okay, that's what I thought you were talking about, but I wasn't sure. So like when you see the chemical name and you know it happened in a lab, the very first ingredient that like was then processed to turn into that is what you're trying to change.
Exactly. Fragrance, because I went down the rabbit hole of learning about how environmentally destructive a lot of fragrance ingredients can be. So there's this new biotech fragrance brand called Future Society. And what they, you know what it is?
Well, Jess has covered it in her news segment here on Fat Mascara.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. So you definitely know the drill.
Yeah,
and cool. I really appreciated that they're not using natural resources to harvest and grow these materials, which are very land intensive most of the times. And they're basically creating beautiful extinct flower scents that I've never smelled before, but I've been really enjoying Future Society. I have this exact same sampler set as Jess's. So I've been really enjoying that.
Very cool. We cannot let you leave without doing the FM5 lightning round. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. What is the first beauty product you ever fell in love with?
Holika Holika Jelly BB Cream.
Oh, Holika Holika.
What is it?
It's a Korean brand, and it's this very cool, like, souffle textured BB cream that was in a very cute cloud jar. I'm not sure if they still make it, but that was my gateway into Korean beauty.
Well, I'm going to Google image that later because it sounds really cute. Holika Holika?
Holika Holika Jelly BB Cream.
Okay, Jelly BB Cream. Wow, that sounds really cute. Okay, what is the last thing that you paid for, even if it was like breakfast today? Like it could just, you know, I don't care if it was a toilet bowl cleaner. What was it?
Oh, I got my laser hair removal today.
Big ticket. Big ticket item. Okay.
I'm glad. That's a good one.
I've changed from waxing to laser hair removal. It was life-changing. So it was my third session today. So
where do you go?
There's a laser hair bar on the 32nd Street near Macy's.
In New York City. Okay, got it.
Now, it's 11 a.m. on your day off. What are you doing?
Probably watching Netflix. Yeah.
Any show that you're into right now?
I just finished Selling Sunset. It was such a fun show to watch. My eyes were just glued the entire time.
I haven't seen the new season. One day, I'll get there.
Yeah.
You're not going to believe this, guys. I am watching it with Eric.
You like
me,
it?
Me, who doesn't watch Real Housewives or anything, I got sucked.
You like the outfits?
Outfits are fire.
It is camp. It is high camp. It is genius camp. I don't even care what they're talking about because they're just give the people what they want. It's just so
I like
over
Jason.
The
top.
Oh, we call him Bezos 1 and Bezos 2. Are those the guys that run the Oppenheim group?
Yeah.
Little Bezos is what Eric calls them.
Little Bezos.
I don't think they're evil. I think
no, not
like,
at all. But they're
like nice guys.
No, they seem like they're smart business people, but they do kind of look like little Bezoses. Okay, moving on.
I think they're sweet. Okay.
FM number 4, go.
Okay, favorite snack.
It's going to be something savory chips. Sun chip, potato chips.
Sun chips. I haven't heard of those in a while.
I know.
Remember they were like so big for a while? Sun chip. I got to bring that back. The French onion. That was like the only flavor they ever had.
A sun chip.
No, there's like 4 flavors.
I need to get back into sun chips, clearly. All right.
And then what do you need to do in order to get a good night's sleep?
Take melatonin. I take a lot of melatonin, actually.
This is the radical transparency we expected from you, Leah, for this whole
radical transparency.
What? That's what Crave Beauty kind of is about. And so I was like, is she going to be as honest as she seems in her customer interactions? You know what I mean? Some people can be putting on a show even as a founder. And I know that's part of the business, but I'm not surprised that you're very much what I expected you to be, which is very she transparent.
Wasn't like, I take hard drugs to fall asleep.
Well, we learned about her laser hair removal.
Yes.
You know, we asked you some questions that like really were curious about your business. And I really appreciate you opening up because I think it helps everybody learn, including our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It was, like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe to Fat Mascara. Leave a review on Apple. Only positive ones. Only 5 stars.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.